time, energy, uncertainty, and short time thermodynamics.
Thank you. So, can you hear me? Thank you. So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for this organizing this very nice and unusual conference, and of course for giving me the opportunity to speak here. This work, I'm going to describe work done with Goran Gordon and Gershon Kuritsky at the Weizmann Institute and Matthias Nest at Uni Potsdam, Germany. And in the interest of time, I'm going to, instead of an outline, give you a quick caricature of the of what I'm going to talk about. So the caricature version is as follows. We have a quantum patient, and we'll pretend he's in equilibrium with a thermal bath. Of course, he would have to be dead for that, but let's gloss over this subtlety. We try to take his, if we take his temperature at reasonably long intervals, we see it's stable, it's the same every time. We take very frequent measurements, it climbs, take slightly less frequent, we see it actually going down. Okay, what is the actual system we have in mind? It's a two-level system and coupled with a bath of harmonic oscillators by a dipole coupling, so-called spin boson model. And we do not make the rotating wave approximation. That approximation would mean dropping off at terms here where the sigma plus the raising operator for the two-level system multiplies the lowering operator for one of the modes. I'm sorry, the raising is multiplied by a raising operator and vice versa. Those terms are usually can be dropped, not in this context. Then we propose to, we consider what happens when you measure HS impulsively, i.e. time is very short compared to to 1 over the energy splitting. And we do this non-selectively, meaning we do not use this information to perform anything, or we don't sort the ensemble. We look at ensemble averages of this, and the effect is to kill G and E stand here for the ground and excited states of the two-level system. The effect is to keep the projections on either one of them, but kill the off-diagonal terms, e.g., GE. Okay, so what does this have to do with time, energy, uncertainty? First of all, can we even do this? Can we measure HS at such short times? Doesn't this violate the energy, time, energy, uncertainty, tau, omega, needing to be of order 1 or more? And as we've heard several times already, this is, we can do this. That version of delta E, delta T is incorrect. And as was shown almost 50 years ago by Aronov and Bohm, we can do this just as any, HS can be measured just as any other operator. We don't have to know that it's an energy. We have to know what HSD is to be able to measure it. And we have some discrete form here of the Feynman formalism. And in effect, what it does is if it's fast enough that we can ignore all the other dynamics, then what we consider here a detector that's a two-level system. And basically, this is just a CNOT operation on the detector, conditioned on the two-level system onto the detector. And this does the trick. You might have an issue with calling this an energy measurement. First of all, during the measurement, HS is not the Hamiltonian. We have an addition. And secondly, I'm using the fact that I know what HS is to perform the measurement. But nonetheless, this is possible. Call it whatever you will. It's possible to measure the operator HS arbitrarily accurately and arbitrarily fast. Okay, secondly, the fact that we do not make the rotating wave approximation is relatively long times it makes no difference, but at short times it's very important. Sometimes it's colloquially known as energy non-conserving because we can have the Hamiltonian can raise the two-level system from a ground to excited state, and while at the same time doing the same to one of the modes, one of the oscillators. So of course the total Hamiltonian is conserved, or its mean value. It's non-conserving in the sense that we can't relegate HSB, even if it's small, to just being a catalyst transferring energy between the S port and the B port. It has a life of its own, and it's part of the energy. If we include it, then there's no non-conservation. Okay. And I'll return to some of these issues. Now, what do we expect to happen? Well, we start, as we said, from an equilibrium state, a Gibbs state for the system and bath with respect to the total Hamiltonian. It has GG terms, EG terms, GE, and EE. The non-selective measurement, which is the same as performing the C0 and tracing over D, the detector, leaves only the diagonal terms in the EG basis. And what does it do to the system and the bath reduced states? Well, in general, it would do the same to the, it does nothing to the bath, but it should do the same thing to rho E, kill the EG terms, except that in this case, they are not there to begin with. The EG terms are there for the total state, but traced over B, they give zero, so they don't appear in rho S. So nothing happens to rho S or to rho B, but the total state changes. It's still correlated, but there's no phase coherence in these. Okay, so now there's a general property that projective measurements increase the entropy, the Van-Neumann entropy. Here it's strictly so because the state has changed. And so we ask, we started from a maximal entropy state, and we just increased it. How can we do that? Well, we have to raise the mean energy. The correct quantum statement of the statement that this is a maximal entropy state, it's maximal with respect to states having the same mean value of expectation value of H total. So we started with a maximal S state. For this value of E, we have to raise E. And in addition, we're also in a non-maximal entropy state, which doesn't take us to a new Gibbs state. So there's still some more room for entropy growth. It's not an equilibrium state. How does this happen? How does measuring HS increase the energy? Well, more directly, we see, okay, so H total mean is the sum of these three terms. Rho S and rho B do not change, so neither does this mean or this mean. Therefore, it must be that the HSB term is the mean is raised by the measurement. Is there a simple argument for this? Yes. Whoops. So first of all, before the measurement takes place in the equilibrium state, we claim that it's negative. Why is that so? So for zero temperature or infinite inverse temperature, this is just the mean with respect to the ground state of the total Hamiltonian. There's a simple argument why it should be equal to twice the energy shift that occurs if we think of this HS plus HB as an unperturbed Hamiltonian and add an HSB, which is off diagonal in the energy eigenbasis. And This is also, we open a quantum mechanics textbook. It tells us that in the leading order and perturbation theory for this energy correction is negative, the second order term. And therefore, we also get that HSB, to at least perturbationally, is the leading order negative. And there's a simple generalization to that turns out to happen if you try to repeat this for a thermal state. And then after the measurement, the fact that HSB was off diagonal and the fact that the effect of the measurement is a C naught from the condition and the two-level system onto the zero. Together, it's easy to evaluate and see that it gives us identically zero expectation value. So it takes us from a negative to a zero state. This is so this is a summary of what I've just said. The total Hamilton energy goes up. HSB increases, same increment. And HS and HB are therefore unchanged. What happens after the measurement? What can we expect to happen? Well, H total, well, after the measurement, we leave the system and bath just to their own devices. They interact with governed by H total. So of course, H total is time independent. Then the mean should not change. We could expect that delta HSB, as the system equilibrates, if this should really depend on local quantities, then we have unitary evolution, but we should have some kind of quasi-equilibrium state. And we could expect this to regain the initial, approach the initial negative value. And the first line being the sum of the other two, we get that this should increase. So we expect heating in the sense of energy increase for HS separately, and for HS plus HB, neglecting HSB at the expense of HSB. And just in passing, we note that there's a very analogous situation with entropies that you can make. Okay, now we're saying HS plus HB increases, but we're discussing measuring a system alone. So what can we say about the mean energy of the system alone? Well, before the measurement, the total state was a stationary state of the total Hamiltonian, so it was stationary. So was rho s. And in particular, right before the measurements, if we just looked at the derivatives, they would have told us it would stay analytically continue it. We don't know there's going to be a measurement. They're all zero. It's going to stay the same forever. What happens after the measurement? It doesn't change rho s directly, but it's now no longer stationary because rho total is not stationary. So let's look at what we can say about the time derivatives at the initial moment. So the first derivative, we can evaluate it. Again, this is a reminder. We get a reduction to the diagonal terms of the Hamiltonian. This is the effect of the measurement, the average effect. This I stands for interaction picture, but direct calculation, exact calculation, shows us that it comes to zero. The fact that this term vanishes is because BI is off diagonal in the HB basis, and rho GGB happens to be diagonal. And we claim this is the famous quantum Zeno effect. You would perform a measurement, and well, it's not clear you need a Zeno effect because it's not clear there. Before the measurement, nothing was happening anyway. But let's look at the second derivative, and it's no longer zero. It turns out to be a positive quantity times sigma z, meaning the excited state gets a positive contribution to its population. And so we have a we have a quadratic increase or a linear rate of change in the population, linear in time, quadratic in time. So the rate of change of rho EE is linear in delta T. So how is this consistent with quantum Zeno effect? Normally we talk of Zeno freezing. It's still consistent. If I make my delta T, I repeat this often and frequently enough, I will not get any evolution. But once I stop, the fact that the measurement also destroyed the correlations responsible for the equilibrium state means I will start drifting. So, but it's still the Zeno regime in the sense that I have this linear, I don't have fixed golden rule rates of change. I have these linearly increasing, so it's still the Zeno regime. Okay, this is the initial moment. What can we say about subsequent evolution? Well, we can't calculate it exactly, but it's possible to write a master equation does not make the Markov approximation. The Markov approximation is that basically the you can neglect the memory of the bath. Then you would get regular fixed time golden rule rates of change in the master equation. They would look like some kind of Einstein coefficients for up and down transitions. But it varies. But when you don't make this approximation, they become time dependent. And what do we expect at very short times? Well, in some sense, the energy. This is where the energy time energy uncertainty relation really comes in. As far as the bath is concerned, the way it probes the energies is resonance. It's really the frequency. The time-dependent frequencies. In very short times, it cannot distinguish between these two states, and these rates become equal. Longer times, it depends on the temperature, but the relaxation prevails over excitation. This can be more explicitly. We can write explicit forms for these R's. GT is a spectral correlation function for the bath coupling. And these are two resonance sinks with the plus and minus with the energies of the two states. There's a factor of two, I guess, joint factor of two here, omega over two and omega A over two. And they're shifted by the energies of the two states. And at very short times, the sink is just flat. It's also, it has zero probability to be in the region where GT is significant. Slightly longer times, this increases, and it's the same for both. But then the time shift kicks in, and there's a significant difference. So at short times, this again, the rates are are equal and proportional to the time. This is the Zeno regime. We can also have a regime where we get cooling. And in fact, we can even have net cooling. But this is, that would be a picture where you started from some excitation. Initially, you always have heating, but you could actually, at some intermediate time, have net cooling. Just to check ourselves, because master equations can be tricky, we also performed two different numerical simulations. And what you see here is not exactly what I told you. We start from a product state, equilibrate here. It's supposed to be close to equilibrium. And in this simulation, we could also perform measurements. Green is the almost instantaneous measurements. Black is less idealized measurements that take more time. But here you can actually see this quadratic effect. So there's, and here we could actually check also what happens to the bath. And it, in fact, at the same time the system gains energy, so do the bath modes. Okay, we could also start from other initial states where the bath and system are in a product state with different, both thermal but different temperatures, and you could have anomalous results where the system is colder than the bath and heats up. That happens initially, and the inverse could also happen at later times. And the real context, okay, so if I have a few more minutes, what I want to discuss is the relation to what happens in the Markov regime, where I can make the usual approximations when I write Lindblad equations, and I have the golden rule and so on. Then there's a very nice theorem by Spohn, which states if I look at rho of, this is rho s, and rho naught is the rho s that corresponds to equilibrium with a bath. And this is the definition of the relative entropy of the two. And this is its inverse time derivative. And there are two facts that Spohn says. First, there's a nice interpretation that sigma is actually the energy, the rate of production of entropy. That is not the rate of change of entropy of the system. The system can also exchange entropy with the bath. That's the net change in entropy after correcting for exchange. So it's the intrinsic, the growth of entropy due to the interaction with the bath. And furthermore, this sigma is always positive, non-negative, in general positive. So it's a form of the second law for this regime, which is often goes by the name of quantum dynamical semigroups. And in most situations, this applies when we talk about unstable systems decaying exponentially. That is this regime. Of course, Zeno is not here. Typically, we are in this regime. And so we have a very nice formulation of the second law. What happens with this in our case? Well, we're not in this regime, and sigma actually gets positive and oscillates between positive and negative values. And it's also, but it's not the, also doesn't have the interpretation of an entropy production rate, so we needn't be too worried. However, Spohn's theorem relies on a deep result by Lindblad. And the first half, the other half of Spohn's result has nothing to do with this interpretation of sigma as an entropy production. There's a general statement that if I have any completely positive map, any which I'm sure some people here would dispute, but you could argue that any proper quantum map should have this property, then the relative entropy for any two states, rho and s and sigma, should decrease, or at least not increase under this operation. You take rho and sigma phi v, should decrease there. And s can be thought of as a sort of distance. It's not exactly a metric, but it has the triangle inequality. And when it goes to zero, they have to become identical. And furthermore, if you, this is Lindblad's theorem. And now if, follow Spohn's reasoning, he says, okay, let's take the time, the map defined by, no, sorry, measurements, unitary evolutions, everything basically falls under completely positive. Now Spohn says, let's look at the time evolution. It doesn't have to be unitary, but it should be completely positive. And then if you look at rho s on the one hand and rho naught, on the other hand, rho naught is invariant under Vt. So we have the same rho naught on either side, and we get that Vt rho should bring rho closer, Vt should bring rho closer to rho naught in this sense. So we have a monotonic approach to the equilibrium state. This is, in our case, this is violated. This is for a two-level system and always in a diagonal state. This is just equivalent to saying that rho e monotonically approaches its equilibrium value, but we have oscillations of rho e. So it's obviously violated? And where does the reasoning go wrong here? So is VT a not completely positive map? Well, not to worry. No, VT is not a map at all. Why not? Because in fact, it's not enough to know what rho s is at time t1 to know what it is at some later time. We also need to know the correlations with the bath. We had the same rho s before and after our measurement, but nevertheless, it evolved differently later. And this can be compared with some nice paper called Beyond the Cross Representation by Stelmachowicz and Buzik from 2001, where they specifically discuss the fact that there's sometimes circular reasoning and you assume that everything has to be CP because everything has to be of Lindblad form because of the cross theorem because you assume CP, but in fact this is kind of a reason to assume CP is not that obvious unless you start from a Lindblad form. Okay, so I'd like to just mention we found a related paper while working on this by Larry Shulman and Gaveau from 2006. And we had very useful discussions with a lot of people, and especially we owe a debt of gratitude to Robert Alitsky from Gdansk and Ronnie Koslov and Michael Chasin from the Hebrew University. Thank you.
Question? I just had one quick question.
Yeah.
You said that rho s after the measurement, the non-selective measurement, is the same as before.
Right.
I presume there's some easy way to see that, but what's the reason giving that your total state is that you have this interaction term in your Hamiltonian, your total state is a thermal state of with respect to that total Hamiltonian?
Well, it also depended on the form of the total Hamiltonian. The HSB, the coupling term, which produces the off-diagonal terms in EG to begin with, is responsible for the fact that if I write rho total as a block matrix with these being EG, that's the two-level system, and here I have blocks that are operators in B, then these are non-zero, but they have a trace. When I trace over B, their trace over B is zero. So rho s is diagonal to begin with.
So it's the particular property of the interaction.
Well, it's a symmetry. It can be generalized, but basically here the underlying symmetry is parity in both senses of x going to minus x for the harmonic oscillators, and even an odd parity states of the oscillators. If I take n minus n, this is the same operator in this case. I can, from the properties under this, what happens to HSB versus HB, one is even, the other is odd, I can get this. And this is probably the way to generalize it. It is a property of some symmetry of the system.
I'm very sorry, but Ladislav Andrei, I'm very sorry, but I'm afraid that your conclusion is correct in the sense that you have non-equilibrium situation in your case. So you don't have a definition of entropy of temperature as such.
Oh, that's correct.
And
I agree. Well, we had forgot to mention this. This is a stylized version of our original caricature. This was a reply actually to a referee of the paper. Who gave us a caricature of our paper, a verbal one, and we tried to do one better and send him our caricature. But of course, we had to be more extreme and provocative than him, so it's not exact. For a two-level system, we do have an effect of temperature. It's always diagonal here, so we could make it look like a temperature, but it shouldn't be thermal in general.
And in other point, one must be very careful with the entropy production for relative entropy.
Sorry?
Yeah.
So I'm saying I'm not sticking to here. This was for the Markovian regime, and there Spohn has some reasoning. I was looking at the relative entropy. Okay. Thank you.